Welcome to Audio Stage, a deep dive into artistic minds. Community is a warm word, a comfy word. We all want to belong to something larger. But community does not exist without exclusion. How else would we know whether we're on the inside or on the outside? In ancient Greece, to be banished was the greatest punishment of all. Being outside the city walls meant no responsibilities anymore, but it also meant no rights and no protection. The banished man was no longer human, but considered equal to a beast or to a god. Great freedom, yet no relevance. This season of Audio Stage was created in partnership with Footscray Community Arts Centre as part of WOW, Women of the World Festival Melbourne, delivered in association with Southbank Centre, London. This conversation was not programmed for WOW Festival Melbourne, but instead was recorded separately amongst the hustle and bustle of the festival. There were so many complex and interesting ideas and generosity of sharing going on that we wanted to catch the ideas as they landed. This conversation was recorded following a discussion on motherhood, which is reflected in this conversation between our guests, Paola Bala and Carly Shepherd. This episode contains discussion around intergenerational trauma, so listen with care. Paola Bala is a Wemba Wemba and Gunditj Mara sovereign woman of Kalbanese and Chinese heritage. She is currently a PhD researcher based at Mundani Balak Indigenous Academic Unit at Victoria University. Her curation, artwork, writing and research centres around raising awareness of Aboriginal women's status as matriarchs, artists and healers, and focuses on addressing impacts of transgenerational colonial trauma for women and children. Carly Shepherd is an emerging cross-disciplinary performance artist whose work negotiates across dance and theatre performance, sculpture, drawing, voice and installation. Often these forms feature interchangeably within a single work, housed within the foundation of the moving body. Carly's work predominantly explores the experience of being a part of the Indigenous diaspora of Australia, intersecting identities and the navigation of transgenerational inheritances, exploring the borders of ownership and autonomy and the mapping of these shifting spaces and their interaction with changing social and cultural environments. We record in a room just out of reach of the festival, but close enough so that you can still hear the murmur of conversations happening in the background. Carly starts by talking about learning to sit with conflict and internal warring paradigms.
Like what you were saying just then made me think of something cool about like how often the powers that be or things that become powerful often become oppressive. And I find that there's an interesting kind of evolutionary flow that happens where something that begins on a fringe eventually goes on this journey to become a part of a ruling set of ideals, and then other things have to challenge it and they become the fringe things, and then there's this kind of awesome cycle that happens, especially people who don't understand how to sit with conflict because they don't understand the conflict that they're in. Like white people, they don't understand like the conflict that they're actually born into. Whereas blackfellas understand it because, you know, it's an oppressive system for us. But so we understand warring paradigms. We understand how to sit with conflict.
Yeah.
And a lot of white people feel like they need to solve in their own entitled way. And I feel like though that conflict is just a part of two arms of the one body that is trying to understand itself. It's like matter expanding and trying to understand itself as well.
Yeah, like even at the festival here of facilitating a conversation and, you know, two women of colour and then two white women, and I couldn't help but notice, and then I had to try to manage that the white women had to explain things on behalf of us and then had to have the last word on a few things, and it really ruined the flow of the conversation because, you know, we're not afraid to go to those places. Like, we're actually used to it and used to fighting, and we're taught to fight because it's a necessary, you know, it's a necessary process that you have to enter to survive colonisation and settler modes of being. So it's, we're not worried about offending people because you've just got to say how things are.
Yes.
And I think, white women get too worried about being polite.
Yeah.
And I don't really worry about being polite. No. I believe in being good to people and respectful, yes, but I don't worry about politeness because that's just a crock that's sold to us, like being ladylike and...
Yeah, that is exactly
right. Yeah. And also filling up silences.
Yeah.
You know how we're good with sitting in silence or with each other, but I noticed that, a lot of, white folks have to fill the bracket up.
Yeah. They've solved... Even if it's just a sentence.
Because we're a problem.
Mm.
But we're not the problem, like Aunty Rosalie Kunath Monk said.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, like, I think a lot of people don't realise that it's embedded white supremacy that's the problem. It's not necessarily white people.
Mm. Yeah.
Until they understand that they carry the scars of colonization as well, because they're a part, obviously they don't carry the scars that we carry. We have a different set, but they haven't yet owned their own set.
Mm-mm.
They don't even know what they are.
No.
Their set, I feel their set is having to grow up and be educated wrong. Be educated incorrectly, having to grow up being entitled, having to grow up with all of these sets of, no, you're right and you're okay and everything is solvable and everything is okay, when that's actually a blatant lie.
And it actually creates, it causes interpersonal relationship problems.
Massively.
Because then when they come into contact with non-white people, they can't sort of operate without, being invalidating and upsetting and then trying to untangle how to have healthy conflict and how to be direct. Like, you've got to shed all of that to get to being, a fairly good, ally. Or actually, Mahogany Al Brown was saying today, to, ally can be problematic too. Because if you think about it, I mean, the United States is an ally of this country, which is, that's a horrifying state of affairs. So, not an ally, but what was she saying? She was using another really good term. But, white and settler people have to decolonise themselves. It's not actually us that need to decolonise, I don't think. I think I use decolonising practices to survive, but I personally don't feel that colonised. I feel like I've done a lot of work on myself to... Mm. Not that it's perfect, and I, have to check myself at times and all of that, but, it's complicated. It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
It's a daily thing.
I think also, like there's a cognitive dissonance that happens, and it's just kind of like this knowledge of an understanding of the truth of a matter, but not knowing how to, but a compulsion to act in the same way that you acted before you knew it.
Yeah.
And
a break with reality.
But I feel like maybe in order to, I don't know, I wouldn't have a fucking clue what the answer is, but maybe in order to combat that or to integrate information and action is to be validated, I feel like, I don't know, we've all been taught everything from a colonial perspective, so it's hard to really know the answer to anything because every thought that we have is kind of come from this embedded... conditioning of our education and everything. So it's kind of hard to know what's real and what's not real. But then that's getting really super deep.
Yeah. Because you have to question everything because it's all confusing.
Yeah.
Like we actually live in confusion.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Exactly. We're in the matrix.
Yes, we're in the matrix. And until you have something else to jump to, you're not going to jump.
No.
And so I feel like that's the problem that white fellas, they don't understand what the safe landing is for them.
Yeah.
They're in the air and they don't understand what the safe landing is for them. And we're like, we've been falling and landing and falling and landing this whole
all
time.
All the time, yeah.
Just like understand. Yeah, it's just this it's a funny old thing.
I said that in my keynote. I used to be afraid of the end of the world and now I'm not because I'm kind of embracing it because my grandmother said, don't be afraid of it because we're going to be fine. Like we know how to suffer. Like, we know how to live without electricity. We know how to live in the dark. And the dark's a beautiful place. It's not a scary place.
Mm.
So only those that have strove for the light are afraid of the dark. So we'll be good.
Yeah.
So I'm not afraid of that anymore. But yeah, just knowing familiarity with suffering makes you actually very strong.
Yeah,
you shouldn't have to go through it, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, exactly, and it does, and it's you find your power in that dark.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like what you're saying about motherhood in that panel before about what motherhood is and isn't, and how mothers get derided and deified and then crucified in the same breath. It was so good. You said it was depressing. I didn't find it depressing. I found it validating.
Yeah, well, good. That's good. It was only because I was like, oh, this beautiful, beautiful sacred session that just happened with Yaren, and I didn't want to like darken it with this tongue-in-cheek poem about like...
No. I don't think you did. I think it was a complete... It's the other side of it, because Yaren's having to do that because it's in... That's the healing in response to the injury.
Yes, to the injury, exactly. Yeah. And I really wanted to... That was the first thing I did, was wanting to articulate what the injury is.
You can't ever win. I'm a mother as well, so as a mother and artist, you're fucked, really.
You're fucked. All the time, you're
because
fucked.
Because you're... I think you're... I always say I was born an artist, and people say, oh, when did you become one, and when did you decide to be one? I'm like, I didn't, it was decided for me.
Yes.
And that always came first. Mm. And then I also always knew I wanted to be a mother. But then you're kind of, you know, they're your creations, and then you've got to figure out how to do both and look after both. And it's not easy.
No, it's not. And it's not easy in this society. Mm. It's not easy with the set of, with the environment that we have no choice but to live in.
Yeah, men don't have to deal with this question.
No, they don't, actually. And that's interesting. Just the amount of guilt. There's so many things, so many times that, you know, well-meaning friends have said, well, actually, they weren't well-meaning, they were being horrible, have actually, in a way, used my motherhood against me to try and get me back for something that they're upset about.
Yeah, that's happened to me too.
Yeah, so, and they're not mothers themselves.
Mm.
I remember one time I was in India and a friend of mine was really upset with me for something, and she said, what are you doing? Look at you. What are you doing? You're 28 years old. You're a mother. And you're gallivanting around India. And I was like, this is my fucking job, man.
Mm.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
And I did tell her, like,
yeah.
I got to the... I didn't... Actually, she would not get to the crux of what she wanted to talk about. But I knew what it was, because I'm not silly. And, you know, we spoke about it a little bit. And then I said to her... it's all good. You can feel like shit, and I'm sorry I've hurt you, but if you ever, ever bring my motherhood into this again, that's the last fucking words you'll speak to me.
Mm. Yeah, fuck off with that, because that's...
But there's so many times that it's happened that your motherhood is used against you in ways that could be life-destroying for you and your child.
Yeah.
You know? Accusations, the kind of mother you are, always having to prove, and you can't just be a human.
Yes.
You can't be, and my God, if you choose to do what you are, which is be an artist, if you choose to actually do that, because I really agree with what you said, I never decided to do this, this has just always been first.
Yeah, it's who you are, who I am.
But that constant policing.
Yeah, I think I've had it used against me because it disadvantages you in your career. So in some spaces, if you talk about it, the people that haven't had kids or haven't experienced it then have some sort of resentment against you because you're somehow managing to do it all, whatever that means.
I know.
And it's so stupid.
It's
because
so dumb.
And people say to me, oh, how do you do it all? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
What are you actually talking about? Because being a mother is separate. To me, being an artist and all the other things I do, like, that's sacred, my motherhood. Like, that's not a job, so I don't see it as how I do it all.
Exactly.
Like, I don't...
That's just a part of my being.
Yeah, it's a part of my life. It doesn't define me, being a mother. Like, as I think that if I was a woman that hadn't had a child, I don't think that defines me either. But the outside world does that.
Yes.
But I don't. I never think that I wouldn't be complete if I didn't have a child. But I just... somehow at a cellular level knew I wanted to. So but it was the same thing as being an artist. Like it was just in my blood that I wanted to do it. But yeah, I hate seeing women discriminated against for not being mothers. That somehow your womanhood is tied up with giving birth as well. Like that's not right.
It's
either
really sick. It's really sick.
But then in the art world, Yeah, and also being, you know, I gave birth when I was 21, and I'm really fucking sick of people saying, oh, you don't look old enough to have a 21-year-old, 22-year-old. And I'm like, why are you judging me?
I know.
Do you think you're complimenting me, but you're really not. You're actually insulting me right to my face.
Yes.
And it's...
You're insinuating a whole lot of really fucked up things.
And right, I was 21. You know, I've got a titter who was 14 when she had her son. Mm. And I'm like, and if I was, what about it?
Yeah.
What about it? So is that the worst thing on earth that a human being is can commit, is having a child young?
Yeah.
It's like, fuck off. Mm. I'm so tired of it. And people saying, oh, you look like sisters. I'm like, you're invalidating her and me.
Yeah.
Don't talk about the age I gave birth. You know, you want me to go there? You want me to say, how old are you? Have you had a kid yet?
Yeah.
You look too old to have children.
Yeah.
What if I start saying that to women?
I know.
You look a little bit past your prime. Are you sure you really want to do this? What if I start saying that to other women?
I know.
I'll get accused of...
I know, but it's okay for those women to then go and dump their shit on you.
Yeah.
About, oh, you know, you're lucky you had your kid.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. It's like, oh, fuck.
Lucky you had it early. Yeah. And I'm like, and I struggled. We were homeless. Yeah. I was broke.
And where were you? Sorry, but where were you when I went through that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you were telling me that I was too young, or that I was irresponsible, or that, you know...
Or wake up to yourself. Or what are you doing? You're a mother, like you said.
Yeah.
Or all the residencies I've missed out on. All the international things I haven't been able to go to. Yep. And people say, oh, you need to go to Banff. You need to go to this. You need to go to that. And I'm like, I'm raising children. So how am I going to get there as well?
Yeah.
Can I take my kids there? Yeah. Are you going to put in extra money for their schooling while I'm there?
Yeah.
Are you going to make sure that they've got everything they need while I'm there?
Yeah.
So it's not accounted for.
No. And I think that is so, so bad.
So then you're left with the choice of, like, where does my kid stay?
Yeah.
Who can I get them to look after them for me while I do that?
Mm.
Because if I don't, you're going to tell me that I've missed the emerging bracket.
I know.
So I know. All these time-based definitions of who you are as an artist is based on time and years, like 5-year, 10-year, established, emerging.
So weird.
And then what, irrelevant?
Irrelevant, obsolete.
Dead.
Obsolete, stupid mother.
Missed
crone.
Out.
Yeah. Crone who tried.
Yeah. Yeah, and somehow the artists that don't have kids are more dedicated because they just completely focused on that.
That actually happened to me. And someone said to me at NASTAR, someone who I really looked up to, and it was actually a really great conversation, to be honest, but there was this kind of thing inside what he was saying. He actually straight out said to me, don't have a child. He said, because I can see what you are. I can see you're an artist. And... don't do it. And, you know, it was really interesting. He didn't say don't have a child. He said don't get in a relationship now, because I was in a relationship with a person who would become my daughter's father. And he must have just been able to see it, and he could see this trajectory that I was on that was just like art career. And I think he got worried. And I was like, fuck off. You know, I'm not going to get pregnant. And then I got pregnant. and to be honest, it was like hard. I didn't know anything. I was too naive. I didn't know. Like if I had have known then, I probably wouldn't have had Asha. I probably would have had an abortion.
Mm.
So it's really interesting. Like, but I, because mother being a mum wasn't anything I wanted to do. It wasn't that I didn't want to. It was just I could never see myself as a mother. I was just sort of like, yeah, kids are cool and everything, but whatever.
Yeah, I didn't. I was at Melbourne Uni. I was drinking, partying first year, and I was going to finish my degree, and then I was going to travel overseas and then be an artist and do this, and this. And then 9 months after meeting someone, then pretty much, maybe a little bit longer, then I got a kid.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what are you doing? You were going to travel the world. You were going to be the star. That's you left our home community. You're the first one to finish school. You were the first one to go to uni. And now you've done this. What a failure.
You've ruined it for yourself.
Yeah.
And you've only got yourself to blame.
Yeah. People said that to me. My loser ex-boyfriend, who was a complete douchebag, said to me, oh, this is a bit of a come down for you, isn't it?
Oh, I've had it all.
Yeah.
I've had it all. My loser best friend said the same thing. Well, ex-best friend said the same. She used to say the same things to me.
Yeah.
Well, you've only got yourself to blame. And you were meant to do this, and we were meant to do it together. It was this really weird thing.
Yeah, and it's like it's the 1950s or something, and we're the disgraced,
I know.
You know, unwed mothers.
Unwed mothers, exactly. I remember me and my brother, because I moved when I got pregnant. I was living in Sydney. I was at NASA Dance College, and I couldn't finish it because I was big belly and I couldn't do all of the like pirouettes and stuff. It was like it was a planet. And I'm trying to turn around. And so I moved back to Frankston, and that was like the most depressing thing ever for me. I was in denial probably for the first 8 years, 7 years of Ash's life, was just in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And not in denial, depressed, and I'd go through like all of the stages of grieving.
Yeah.
It was weird because I didn't know, I just didn't want it. But I didn't know how to not want it. I didn't know how to be valid in that.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely was fucking in love with her.
Yeah.
So I just didn't understand that duality in myself. I remember there was just no one. Like, all of my friends were just kind of like, okay, you're a mum now. We don't relate to you at all.
Mm.
And
my friends were the same, but my cousins were fine because a lot of my cousins had babies early, so it wasn't culturally in the Aboriginal community, my family, it wasn't an issue.
Yeah,
it was people outside of it who were freaking out on my behalf, and I'm like, how does that help me right now?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And then I left her dad, and I was on my own, and it was. Some people talking to me like I'd somehow punished myself and shackled myself. So I had to sort of rebuild the confidence.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how people think that that is going to foster a young mother's love or confidence in mothering.
I know.
They actually try to beat you down until you become the thing that they're accusing you of. Yeah. So I had to really build myself back up from that. But I had severe postnatal depression.
Same.
And had to really fight hard to get well to be a good mum. You know, for her. But yeah, now she's really good. I've just started a therapy fund for my kids. I don't own a house. We live poor. I don't think we'll ever own a house. But I say to my kids, I'm putting money away for your therapy for when you grow up. Exactly, you've got to overcome me. Don't buy a house, just get a therapy fund going.
That's why I put that line in.
Yeah.
Mothers will always fuck their kid up somehow.
Yeah.
Because you will.
Yeah. I say, your job's to survive me. That's what I keep telling them.
Yes.
Mm. Exactly. Even though I'm great, like I'm amazing. I'm deadly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not always a good, great mum. I told them the other day, I said, I'm not trying to be a good mother. I'm mediocre and that's enough for you guys because I tried being a perfect mum for ages and it nearly killed me.
Yep.
So now you can just deal with mediocre.
Yep.
And they're like, you're crazy.
Me exactly as I am.
But they love it. Yeah.
And then, I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that Asha doesn't, I still, because, you know, she doesn't live with me, so I still, like, freak out, wake up in the middle of the night, like, I'm so shit, da-da-da-da-da, my daughter is going to hate me, she's never going to talk to me and all this stuff. But people like you give me a lot of strength. And I think this is another thing, is that feeling of isolation that I've always had, not knowing that you'd been through it.
Yeah.
That, you know, Arika's going through it as well.
Yeah.
That Lydia's going through it and has been through it. And, like...
You're not meant to talk about it. We're meant to go, oh, we love our kids, love being a mum. It's like, no, I don't always love being a mother.
Sometimes I want to throw my children out the window.
Yeah. And Mother's Day, I would rather go to a hotel by myself and just have the day off and not do anything for other people.
Yeah.
But then usually I just kind of hang and enjoy it.
Mm.
But... Yeah, there's times I'll just go away and book into a motel by myself and get away from them.
Yeah.
Most of the time I enjoy it. I like my relationships with them. I don't even know if that's necessary about being their mother. I just like them for who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're cool. Kate's nearly 13 and Rosie's 21, nearly 22. So it's like, you know, and people go, oh, you've got great kids. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like I don't take all the credit for them because I'm like, I've part fucked them up, part... done well.
Yeah.
So the rest is them.
Yeah. Being cool, being people, being awesome.
Because they're already out there. They're like in the stars and universe and then they pick whoever to give birth to them. And So it's all sort of predetermined and then just try not to fuck them up too much.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you belong to contemporary feminism? Does feminism speak about you? Is it concerned about you? Well, the word feminism... The word feminism, I think, is just a whole lot of really fucked up things that probably were good for some people at some point and are good for some people at some point, maybe.
Mm.
I don't really relate to it. I don't really. I like the fact that I can vote. I like the fact that blah, blah, blah. But then I'm a friggin' white presenting black fella, so I've got a lot of things that my other sisters don't have. And also, this word here, I mean, where is it? Where is that appropriate? Contemporary feminism, is that appropriate in Australia? Where in Australia is it appropriate?
Mm.
Where in the world is it appropriate? Who is that? Who is feminism? Who is it for? Mm. Like, I wouldn't have a fucking clue.
Yeah, I don't. It's not. I mean, I just think it was made for and by and about the rights of white women,
yeah.
Like liberal feminism. But there's parts of it that I think in theory are fine that I wish were true and that yeah. translated, but they're not.
Yeah.
So I talk about, if anything, being an intersectional Aboriginal or black feminist, but not a feminist in that sense.
No.
I'm actually matriarchal. And matriarchy has been around for tens of thousands mm. of generations. And we had our roles in our mm. culture. We never felt inferior to men. Mm. That was mm. never a thing. That's a mm. colonial construct. So, but patriarchy is very damaging in all cultures. You know,
exactly.
It's like... Yeah, and we deal with that in our culture as well. Mm. So that's when, yeah, but it's complex mm. and complicated.
It
it's
is.
Not, I can't comfortably just say, yeah, I'm a feminist.
No.
I can't do that.
No.
I have to talk about my matriarchy and, no. you know.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my best friends is a men's rights activist, you know, and mm. that doesn't mean that, you know, he's one of the most important people in my life because he keeps me real,
mm.
you know, and and he's not an asshole. He's not some scary monster. He's just a person who is probably just like talking to a feminist.
Mm.
Talking to a men's rights activist is the same as talking to a feminist.
Mm.
They're just people with points of view.
I think
that could be damaging
groups,
and could be
yeah,
good.
Yeah. All groups are in danger of becoming fundamental. So
yes. Thank you.
I think people assume that they think they're on the good side of the fight, but they can be our worst enemies
yep.
because they appear
yep.
to say all the right things, but they're actually...
Yep.
sabotaging us
yeah.
by thinking that they have something in common with us.
Yes.
That's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually,
and
yeah.
I think it was Marika that said don't confuse your feminism with your racism or for your racism, I think she said.
Wow.
Mm.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's a fundamentalist thing. I grew up in a cult, so
mm.
I had a lot of that kind of hell,
mm.
fire, brimstone, all that stuff.
Mm,
and
the
so
extremes.
Anything that's fundamentalist to me is just kind of like, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, multiplicity is really important.
Yeah.
It's what grows ideas, it's what challenges ideas. And, you know, you can agree with two completely conflicting things at the same time. And that's just reality.
Mm.
Or disagree, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I'm in this team.
Yeah.
And if you think something different, blah, 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 it's, you know, it ends up being fascist in
mm.
the end.
Yeah, absolutes are really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have we received from our mothers? What will we pass on to our daughters? What are we the custodians of?
I just think that I'm one part of that matriarchal link at this point in time where everything that's come before me has taught me something. So it'll go on, like I'm not the most important thing in my world or my universe. So it's going to my daughter and my son and it'll go to their generations, you know, if they have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all accumulative. So it's not one thing
mm-hmm.
and all of them have given me one thing or another. Some things I've had to reject because of traumas in our family and things that I've fought against and disagreed with. You know, as a kid, like, just I adore my family and my culture and our matriarchy, but there's parts of it that I've disagreed with and had to push back on. So, yeah, you do that. It makes you really strong. It's not easy to disagree with your elders and with your family, but you find a new space. So Mum and I had to go through a lot of pain to redefine our relationship, and I had to go through a lot of healing and therapy of my own. And now she says that, and she was quite dead against it. And then she's swung right around and said now that she's done therapy and healing because I did. So that's very humbling when you see a flip
mm.
of the generational, you know, knowledge. But it's not even our pain. It's
no.
it's you know, patriarchal settler colonial violence that we're having to just work against all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we lived in, like, we had virtually, like, it was like paradise, self-determined worlds of our own, you know, do our own thing. So you always, yeah, trying to get that back somehow, but you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've made it all up. I've made up everything. I've got, like, whispers in my ear, plus, you know, there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of trauma, and that trauma is silencing. And so what me and my brother and sister have had to do is listen to the silence.
This season of Audio Stage was created in partnership with Footscray Community Arts Centre as part of WOW, Women of the World Festival Melbourne, delivered in association with Southbank Centre, London. The music for this season was created by Louise Terra. Audio Stage is a labour of love, created by Jana Perkovic and me, Bethany Atkinson-Pinton. If you like Audio Stage, please give us a review on iTunes. It really does help. Share it with your friends or follow us on Twitter. Help us reach the ears of other people that might be interested in Audio Stage. A deep dive into artistic minds. Coming up next time on Audio Stage.
Through this lack of story, this lack of history, this erasure, we get to a point where we've just been fed the white male storyline. And I think it was Jill who said, for the next 100 years, we just have to hear from women if we want equality, because for the last 100 years, this is all we've been hearing.